was a problem, yo, I saw him.
Where to you, mother?
Hey, everybody, I am Joe Gatto, and I'm along with my other cool mom,
Steve Byrne.
And you are listening to Two Cool Moms. Thank you so much for coming through. Steven, pleasure to see you.
Joseph, fantastic to see you, by
the
way.
Thank you. Who, me?
You look sensational. Doggy Dilf.
You know it.
Walk me through this.
You know it.
You're walking around the neighborhood. Yeah. You got them on the leashes. You're letting them know.
Woof, woof.
This dog's down to ow.
Is that a shih tzu? Don't mind if I shits do.
What is your favorite dog? Favorite breed of dog?
I have a breadth of dogs, but a lot of them I don't know what they are. But my favorite dog, I think, has Havanese in it. And my favorite dog is my favorite is Biscotti. And Havanese is like that long snouted, like smaller kind of dog, but they're burrowers. So they like dig for no reason. So like if she's in the bed to get comfortable, she'll do like a funny scratch at the bed and whatever. I just think it's so adorable and I really like her. So
is there Havanese. A dog you've always wanted to own, a type of breed
yes.
that you never had?
Husky.
Husky.
Ooh, Siberian Husky.
Lost Boys, huh?
I would love to ride.
The dreamy blue eyes.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. You know what I would do to a Husky?
Well, consider what you do to a Yorkie.
Rescue it. I would rescue it.
No, you'd be receiving.
With the Husky, you know what the problem is? The hairs. But I don't think I care about that much anymore.
That hair is getting everywhere.
But you know what? So's the love. The love is getting everywhere. I always wanted a Siberian Husky. When I was growing up, I always wanted a Husky. But I will say this too. What really astounds me that it is even like a breed of dog. I can't believe it's such the most kind-hearted beast is a golden retriever. It's unbelievable. These videos you see of these dogs, such great dogs. Name me one golden retriever that someone has met that they do not like. I will punch you because you're lying.
Well, you know, it's so funny. Every time like a pit bull, once a month, like a pit bull or pit bull mix attacks a kid or takes somebody out or whatever, they always go, But this shouldn't be a slam against pit bull. You never hear that about golden retrievers. A golden retriever has never mauled a child playing.
And maybe aggressively licked it.
Or three.
Yeah.
Like, there's not a pack of golden retrievers.
Yeah.
They're just running around, lying down, waiting to have their belly rubbed. That's
right.
It.
Chasing first base. Yeah. I mean, that's a bad rap that, you know, anything does. But you hear that, too, about, like, bears. Like, bears attack people.
But but bears aren't living in people's homes.
True.
I think,
but
look.
Shark attacks happen.
Yeah, that's the wild. It's like the wild. That's
right.
When you're in the wild, that's what happens.
But you're
like,
going to tell me that there's not some nice sharks out there that are just coming for a nibble?
I'm sure there are.
Right. There's
probably
that,
like a, whatever the vegetarian, like a nurse shark.
They're a vegan nurse shark.
Those are fine. Yeah.
What's the one that goes on the bottom there? Hammerhead's funny. They're funny looking.
No, like
Hammerhead's a weird looking animal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Seems like somebody, they forgot to finish that one. It was like, it's close enough.
Oh, I'm sure you're going to, you should put it in at the end with your thing with the, that one night I came up and I kind of like, I was playing with, this is when I, when you do your live shows, we know each other's acts so well.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, if I were to do something, I'm like, it's another thing I'm going to fuck with Joe's act. Towards the end though of the set where I knew I wasn't going to interrupt the story or whatever, but that time it came out.
Oh, let's talk about that because
I went back like this. I would do my thoughts,
right?
My little sniglets or whatever.
Yes, yes.
Because you had your thing, and then but I did mess up because I thought you'd do the boomerang thing, right?
Yeah.
And then you didn't do the thing.
I hadn't thrown it yet.
And I came out and I was like, oh, I know it. I know it a bit. And then I came out and I kind of disrupted the bit. And again, I'm fucking hammered.
Yeah, oh, hammered.
So
yeah.
I shouldn't have done it, but. I love the improv nature of, I love doing sets, but I also love the spontaneity of improv.
Yeah, but you should do it when it's invited. It's very funny that you retracted like a vampire because all vampires need to be invited and you weren't invited.
I wasn't invited. But it was also one of those shows. It was so fun.
What a great crowd, yeah.
If the show wasn't great, I definitely wouldn't have done that because it's just like they're on such a high.
So great.
That was the California one, right?
Yep.
Oh God, that was so fun.
Thousand Oaks.
That was one of my favorite shows to have worked.
Honestly,
with
one
you.
Of my best. It was the 1 year anniversary of me doing stand up too.
Yeah, that's right. And I think
stand-up.
That's what brought me out.
Yep.
Because you Jiggy decided, and I were talking and
you decided that you needed to make an announcement for everybody.
But I also think it's fucking crazy when you think about the fact that 1 year ago, at that time, which is only just like 2 or 3 weeks ago, right? A year ago, we're in Wisconsin in just a comedy club. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I don't even know if I can do this. And literally to question yourself and say, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can sustain it. I don't know if I have an act. And then within 1 year's time, you're selling out theaters and sustaining the momentum of laughter because they're past, oh, it's Joe from Jokers. Yay. And now it's 2 minutes in. It's like, you got to make us laugh now. You do it. I remember every time incrementally be like, I'm up to 55 minutes now.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I'm up to 58 minutes. It's like, it was really cool as a friend to see.
To build it, right?
That progression. And to know that in a year you went from questioning in a club to literally theaters.
Yeah.
It's a much different energy. Clubs are easier.
I wasn't used to a club stage though. Because I never played comedy clubs ever, right? So I feel like people who've played comedy clubs are used to that intimacy that come with it.
Yeah, it is easier because if the act's not going well, right? It's so intimate. You could talk to that person, and everybody in the room has reference to whom you're talking to. In a theater, you've got to entertain. You have to have an act because you can't isolate. You can, but not to degree.
Not everybody's in the party.
Not everybody's, and sight lines and everything. People can't see it. And that's a crazy progression.
Yeah. We should also mention that my shirt says Doggy Dilf, because if they're not watching this on YouTube, we just got into a whole weird dog conversation. If they're listening to it on one of the platforms, and it's like, no one knows my shirt says Doggy Dilf. Everyone just thinks that you called me a Doggy Dilf.
Oh, that's so funny.
I do enjoy improv and stuff like that. I come from improv roots. I'm not afraid of that stuff at all, you know. But
you don't enjoy it as much as I think. When your show's over, when your show's over, you're done. Do the meet and greet, and then you want to go eat. Like me, I'm like, hey, this is a great crowd. We should improv together tonight at the end. You're like, I want to do the meet and greet, and I want to eat. I want to eat my dinner and go home. And I'm like, yeah, but we could fuck around. I love the improv nature, but that's why I love that.
Well, that's why you love when I come with you to places. Oh, like, God. I jumped up with you at the Cellar, right?
The Cellar, the Stand, goofed off. And then even that last one, that live one in Nashville, obviously doing the podcast was so fun. But then when we just went off the rails at the end, it was one of
the best. But in comedy, you have to be with somebody that you can mesh with for the improv stuff. So have you had scenarios where you're like, oh, this isn't working, and then it didn't work till the end? When you try to like throw, because you jump on with a lot of different people over the course of your career, right?
I love it. I love kicking the tires because sometimes it's heavy lifting,
right?
And then other times it's just like, oh, this is great.
I remember
keep my feet up.
I remember when we were on tour with you guys, the Sullivan and Son fellas.
Yeah.
So me, you, Roy Wood, Owen Benjamin, and Ahmed, and it was me, Merck, Hugh, and Sal. We were in Nashville for the comedy festival. And we were doing Zanies, and you and Owen were doing a show together. And at the end, you said, yeah, you guys should just all come up. And we all came up. They didn't even have enough microphones for us.
And then
the crowd was like, what the hell is going
on? Vince Vaughn joined.
And then Vince joined.
Angela Johnson.
Right. And then the whole place, I think we didn't even start using microphones. And then Owen just started playing music. We were just singing. And I remember looking out to the crowd, and half of them were like, oh, my God, this is amazing. And the other half were like, what the fuck is going on right now? So I think as a comedy person that goes to a comedy show, improv always brings like a, wow, could you believe this happened? And I feel like you don't get that in any other. Like, nobody goes to a Broadway show and was like, you're never going to believe what happened to the Phantom in the third act.
He just started talking to the crowd.
All of a sudden, he took the mask off and he was walking around like a chicken. Like, you don't hear that, you know?
Right, yeah.
So I think that comedy, live comedy, has that unpredictability, which is such a fun thing to reason why to go out to see it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So joegattoofficial.com and steveburncomedy.com is really where you can go to get tickets.
Steve Byrne Live
is where you could come to get us to see them, because you never know what's going to happen, guys.
But even when I was doing my sets at the Cellar and the Stand, I'm like, yeah, just come down, hang out. And then you show up, it's like, we should just go up together. I was like, let me just do 2 or 3 minutes, establish myself, and then bring you up. And then I love that. I love going up and just going, we have no plan.
Right.
We never discussed anything
never.
Before. We got to hit this, nothing. Just
blank slating it.
How are you? And now we have 8 minutes
from
that person and then that person. And it just spirals out of control.
It's always great. I should come with you tonight.
What is it? What's it like for you? Because you never did the clubs in New York City.
Never.
So you're.
I've never been on a club in New York City by myself on stage. Never. Never. Never did 15 minutes, 10 minutes, 5 minutes. Never did any time on stage in New York. Do you know the story of my first stand-up set? Do you know story? Jiggy.
Yeah.
That son of a gun.
Yeah.
Jiggy and I make a bet, and I say if it was more of like a conversation. It was like, look, I said I'll open for you. It was when he was open for us. I was like, listen, I'll open for you one day, and we laughed, whatever. I said, sure, my first stand-up set. We do the tour, and we're in. I said, as long as I'm not working, we do the tour. It's in London. We're doing the London tour. We go travel day to get over to Dublin. There's a day off in between. Jiggy books travel and the show in Dublin, and says, hey Joe, I need an opener. You'll be in Dublin.
Wow.
Could you come open for me? Could you come do 15 minutes?
Yeah.
So I went and I did my first stand-up set with him, with Jiggy there. I don't even remember what I said, to be honest. I'm sure it's on video somewhere or whatnot. I remember like I talked about how I don't know how to do stand-up, and I had written down, as all comedians do, and it was for any reason, you just always write down stuff that you think is funny because you never know what you're going to use. I'll use it as a line in Jokers or whatever, you know? So I just opened up my thing and I read stuff.
Right.
And that I had written down that didn't make any sense. And I just tore myself apart about it, about what I said. And it crushed. It was phenomenal. It was really, really good. Some of the stuff is actually translated into my bit now.
Oh,
like
really?
Some of the stuff like that at the end.
From the very first time you were
from
on
the very
stage,
first time on stage, the last piece of my show, when I go through the texts and then I'm thinking, some of that thinking stuff was some of my thoughts. So I just put them in context. So it was like that. It was like that was the first time ever I did stand up. I remember being so nervous. I had literally just come from playing the O2 for four nights, and I was so nervous to get up there on that stage.
But it's interesting to me too, because that bit, I know exactly what you're talking about. You almost do these kind of what ifs, right? And it's literally it's in the middle of a bit. I wouldn't say it's in the middle. It's at the three-quarter mark of a bit. You do a bit about, you know, you just being you, and somebody texts you accidentally, and now you're building the bit. And now we wait. And then you take a moment to go, oh, let me experiment and put this chunk here, which is really an interesting choice, because you would think that you just killed the momentum to the joke that you just built up. But what it does, it's such a strong bit. You bookmark it, and then you come back to it. That's a hard thing to do. And by the way, it's not only a hard thing to do. It's a testament to how much work you've done. It's your closing bit.
Yeah.
And you stifle your closing bit, you stop the momentum, but they're still on the hook. They're still interesting. It's one of those bits that if you're looking at it from a perspective of just pure stand-up comedy, it's almost like it shouldn't work, but it does. And it shouldn't work because it's something that could go anywhere, right, in the act, isolated on its own. But you put it at a really interesting area of the show. Again, it's your closing bit. I've always been fascinated with the fact that, man, it fucking works. Yeah. And again, it shouldn't, but it does. And you don't stifle the momentum.
I hear you getting angry as you speak about it.
Well, I think I'm kind of like
it shouldn't work, but it does.
It does, but again, it's a testament to like you're just naturally gifted in
stand-up.
I really believe that. And I think it does enhance. I think if you ask most comics, take your closing bit and just talk about something else for 2 minutes in the middle of the closing bit, I think a lot of comics would be like, no.
Yeah.
Why would I do that? Why would I kill that? And you do it, and it fucking crushes.
Oh.
So,
and it always works great when you come out and interrupt it. Talk about crushing the momentum. Enter Steve Burt.
Oh, Uncle Stevie's had a few.
Can here comes Stevie
finish?
Jameson.
Love you.
All righty, here we go. This is coming to us from Liz. Hey, moms. I'm due with my second baby in 2 weeks, a girl. My oldest is a 2-year-old boy. Any suggestions on how to keep a little boy occupied and entertained while I adjust that first week to having a second baby in the house? First off, it's not going to just be one week.
1 week. It's, oh, that's so like, sweet and naive.
Yeah.
After a week, we'll be fine.
Yeah.
Oh,
good luck.
Good luck with that whole thing.
I will say that the first child, every moment is precious.
Precious.
It's the most unbelievable thing. She's taking her first steps.
Not even. She lifted her arm.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Everything. Yeah. The second one comes along. It's like, yeah.
Could you walk already? It's like, come on.
Yeah. Come on. So I think you're thinking your little angel, is the baby boy going to be okay? It's like, believe me, you're going to think, absolutely, you got your hands full over here. You're going to be sleep deprived, all that other stuff.
For sure. How to keep them entertained, I think the major thing is that you're going to need help. Like, you need another human.
Yeah.
Because it's very, very taxing and hard. Even if it's somebody that just comes for a couple hours a day to either help with the other kid, mm-hmm. With the older child, and just keep them engaged a little bit, or to hold the baby while you're playing, you know, because you don't want to forget about that. A lot of part of that comes from guilt, right? Because I remember that part of it is like, oh, I can't forget about this one because we have this one now.
Sure.
Trying to get the relationship together. I think human help is important. Getting somebody that can help you manage that will help it be better and be best for that child.
Right.
Because, sure, you get a new toy, get a new something or whatever, and they can get something they're interested in. They're kind of young. You said they were two, so they're still going to need a lot of love and attention. So I would definitely say get some human help. And in-laws, babysitter around town.
Right.
Guy with a van. I was just seeing if you were listening, because you're just saying.
Well, right? No, I was getting ready for mine. I was getting ready for my tag.
What's your tag?
A hungry pit bull. I was bringing a full circle, but then you had the van. I was like,
get a golden retriever. Good. Yeah. No, I think that's important. I think you get some help.
But it is, I think it's always, I don't know. You look at one picture and then all of a sudden your feed understands the algorithm. It's like, oh, they want more of that. I love pictures of the protective dogs with the baby.
Love that.
Or the other child.
Yep.
I always want, one of my regrets is I never got the puppy and baby at the same time where you see them. I've always wanted that experience.
I have that was cool. I got, I got Spumoni when Remo was, they're the same age.
So is Remo attached to Spumoni?
Not at all.
No.
Spumoni's attached to me as Remo is.
Yeah.
They are, we have gotten, I do see the attachment with the child though, because Milana picked out, my daughter picked out Cupcake.
Okay.
And Cupcake is our pit bull mix. Right. She's very small though. She's not, she's definitely a terrier, more terrier than anything else. But she grew up with her, like, and now that she is, that's her puppy. That's like, you know, that's, oh, that's Cupcake, sweet. You know, oh no, Cupcake needs me, like that kind of stuff.
Right.
It's really, really cute. So it's cute to see a kid raise a puppy.
Sure. You know what I find fascinating? I saw that. Did you see the Pamela Anderson documentary?
I did not.
Just came out on.
Wow, it took you a long time to mention documentaries. Because let me guess, Steve, you watched a documentary.
Here we go.
Here he is. Steve, enlighten me about what you learned, because you are such an aficionado about documentaries.
Well, I think amongst other variables why her and Tommy Lee split, mm-hmm. but the doc does make it seem that he was the love of her life, right? But, you know, it's just such a crazed, you know,
love affair
that it just couldn't sustain itself. The breaking point for her was when she had the second child, right? And he, as a husband and as a father, felt neglected from his wife, and all the attention is going to the children. And he acknowledges, he's like, what about Tommy? Like, what about me? And I do think I've never had that, but that I've heard from a few random friends that have been in that situation where they feel, it's just like, it's all about the kids. Yeah, of course it is. Of course it is. But I don't think that he and maybe her ever had that healthy communication to say, hey, you know, I'm here too, you know, because she's such a maternal presence with her boys. You could, I don't know, the whole doc was great, but I was like, wow, that's showcasing an element that does cause some fissures in relationships.
100%.
Once the kids are introduced, I think it takes I think it's the insecure person that is looking for acknowledgement and attention from the mother.
Yeah.
When there's two kids in the fold, it's like, yeah, you got it.
Yeah.
You got to do that.
I think the big thing to remember there, like, you hear from people, and I'd heard this when I had kids. It was like, always focus on your relationship, because if that falls apart, then the whole family does.
Right.
And I was like, that's an interesting perspective to have. And it's like, you don't put the kids first. You got to keep your partner first. And I was like, that's an interesting perspective to have. Mm-hmm. And I don't know which one is right. Like, I know, yeah. I could tell from my experience, all you could draw from, right, is your own experiences or seeing what's around you, right? But I've seen relationships where they focus on the kids mm-hmm. and everything's fine, and I've seen relationships where they don't focus on the kids sure. and everything's fine. And the other side is I've seen they focus on the kids and it falls apart, or they focus on each other and it falls right. apart. So I don't think there's a right way to do it, but I think it's just all the mindset of partnership.
Sure.
And I feel like when that falls apart, then it all falls apart. So there, he wasn't feeling like he had a partner, or he wasn't being a partner, whatever. I didn't. It's like, what about sure, me? Yeah. Like, it should be, what about us, right?
Right.
Like, what about us?
Yeah.
So I think that's an interesting perspective to have. I don't think there's a right way to do it. I just think it's very important to remember that you're both in it together.
What works for you, yeah. But I do agree with you. I think if you don't have that commonality of, like, mm-hmm. you know, the two of us got to figure this out. Or I think you, for the most part, it always boils down to communication. And you yeah. would hope that he would communicate.
It's an interesting thing to say. I should check out that doc.
By the way, it's phenomenal.
Okay.
And you really appreciate her. You know, I was always proud of her. I never watched that tape when it came out. Like, I heard, I was like,
It became a point of pride for you.
Well, I mean, for just me, I was like, I'm not going to watch something that's personal to people.
Yeah, for sure.
And you hear how it's being exploited or whatever. And I was like, I'm not going to watch that. Yeah. It just seems...
It feels super invasive. It's kind of like when all those nudes leaked for all the celebrities. Remember that?
Sure,
what was that? Spank Bank? What was it called? Spankathon? What was it?
Mr. Skin?
Mr. Skin, yeah.
Well, right. Mr. Skin was the movie one where he was taking...
They called it like Porn Gate. It was like Nude Gate or whatever it was. They had a term for when it all came out, Jennifer Lawrence and all them.
Yeah.
And that's it. But I you know, that just doesn't feel the same, right?
Yeah, when you hack somebody's personal information and...
It feels creepy, what it is.
Very creepy, yeah. But now that's... What happened to them became like a launching pad for the Kardashians.
Amazing.
It's like, I think it's so crazy that people still like hold her... In terms of relative, like she's relative, like she's doing criminal justice. It's like, guys, she fucked Ray J. Okay,
she's much more than that, Steve. So don't boil it down to just that.
No, to me, that's how it always.
I watched that tape then, did you? That's the takeaway, y'all.
I never watched it, by the way. Never watched it.
How'd you know?
Huh?
Then how'd you know?
How'd I know what? I don't know anything that happened in it, but I know of the tape. Of course I do. I read the news.
I watch documentaries.
You watch Ray J?
All the time.
And Kardashian, you
watch? All the time, 100%.
Yeah? It's your screensaver.
100%. No, I just watched Ray J. I didn't look. No, I think, yeah.
I
do agree with you.
Isn't it gross?
Are you mad about me leaking your sex tape?
My short film?
That'd be a great name for a sex tape.
Short film? It's just me going, and then credits.
And it's just you.
Story by.
Starring Steve.
Co-starring.
Oh, I love you. All right, next one.
Okay, here we go. Okay, this is coming to us from Serena. Serena writes, on a budget now, cheap date nights, ?
Oh, yeah.
So suggestions for cheap dates.
I love pizza in an escape room. Those games that they get sent to your house, like those murder mystery boxes.
Oh, you've done that?
I love them. Really? Yeah, I got them, yeah. Actually, Murr got me me and Bessie used to love doing them, and then Murr got them for me for Christmas. He got me a subscription for him one year, a couple years back, so I got like one in the mail a month or whatever, and I wasn't able to keep up with them.
Kinda?
So I do it with my niece and nephews, too,
Okay. And
it's fun. They're a lot of fun. They're super cheap. They take up a lot of time. You know, you speculate, you could have fun with it, so those are good.
Murder mystery. And I've not
you never done it?
No.
Next time you're on the road, we should bring one.
I've done escape rooms and stuff.
Escape rooms are fun.
With the kids.
Escape rooms are fun, yeah. But so the murder mystery box is basically they send you all the evidence, and you have to go through it all and solve the mystery.
How long does it take?
2 hours-ish.
Really?
An hour and a half, 2 hours, yeah. Yeah, they're fun.
How many people do you need to do it?
You could do it too.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I would do that. That sounds fun.
We should do it.
How expensive are those things, or how cheap they are?
You could get them pretty cheap.
Yeah.
$20. And then 2 hours, so it's $10 an hour if you do the math. You're not gonna, what are you doing? I mean, and it's engaging. It's not like, you know, watching a movie, right? You know, every half hour, that's $5. I mean, it's not too bad, right? $2.50, 15 minutes. What are you, it's not a problem. $1.25 every 7.5. What are you, I mean, what are you?
I just know you're going to start.
Look, it's every 33 seconds is 33 cents. What am I going to tell you? I don't care. Mathlete.
guys, if we play this for 3 hours, think of the money we're saving.
I think I like it because it's engaged as well. Like you're talking, you're working it out, problem solving, communicating. I don't know. I haven't done one in a while, though. I actually did one with my niece and nephew that came over for a sleepover. Their Christmas gift was to spend time with me because they don't see me and they want to.
Yeah.
So my niece and nephew, they're twins, and they came over and they stayed over at the apartment, and I brought one, and we did that, which was really fun.
I don't think there's anything wrong with just like
hanging out,
just getting a good oven baked pizza,
great,
and just watching a movie,
100%.
Even
at home,
yeah,
for sure. Because at home, the experience of watching a movie at home is completely different than going out. I don't like the going out to a movie date. I like the at home movie date. You're pausing, you can talk, you're not worried about other people, right? You're more comfortable,
yeah,
right? You get a cuddle on. Who knows? I like that. I like that.
Cuddling is a gateway drug too.
Still sleeping.
You won't find a bigger movie fan than this guy.
Yeah.
I love...
But movies don't make good dates.
I love going to movies. I love the smell of popcorn.
The experience. Yeah.
I love the experience of it. I'm not going to lie. The last 2 years, every time I go to movie theater, there is somebody that's ruining the experience.
Yeah, of course.
Every single time. When Nicole Kidman does that commercial, it's great because she's the only one there.
All right.
It's like a Sandals commercial. There's nobody else on the beach.
Yep.
You go to a show, I'm telling you, there was a guy by himself. I took my Super Bowl Sunday. Everybody's watching the Super Bowl. I miss my daddy-daughter dance, so I take my daughter out for a nice dinner. I'm like, let's go see the Titanic, 25th anniversary.
Yeah.
Take her out. We sit down.
Let's stop this relationship from sinking. Daddy's at work. Iceberg right ahead. I trust you, Dad. Try to avoid that.
But we sit in a row, and lo and behold, three seats down, some cluck's got to sit there. There's a whole theater. You could sit anywhere.
Oh, my
goodness.
Then
the first 20 minutes are just here.
Oh, there it is. Right.
Chewing out loud, on his phone, looking up things. Just
he's
like,
fact-checking the movie.
Why, dude? Every time I go to a movie theater.
You know, I have a very funny story about movie experiences.
Please tell it because my story sucked the air out of the podcast.
I love it. No, this podcast was terrible before we even told that story. I would say this. The boys and I are on the road when Spider-Man No Way Home came out. So we're playing the arena wherever the hell we are.
Yeah.
And then we're like, you know what? There's a midnight showing. It was on a Thursday. I think there's a midnight showing.
Is the one
showing
where all three of them show up?
In the middle. No. This is a while ago. So it's like two Spider-Mans ago. I think it was Tom Holland's first one, actually.
Oh, the first one.
First stand.
They're all amazing.
So Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah, there you go.
That's the name of it. So we buy out the theater. We're like, you know what? I'm like, we want to watch a movie. We don't want to get bothered by people. Me and Q like really want to see.
Just
we tell
it.
Murray, like, you know what? We're in the middle of wherever it was. So the tickets were, you know, whatever it was. And we're splitting it four ways. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you do the math, it's cheap. It's the same amount. And so I said, it's the same amount as the staying home. $20, you divide it. So I said to him, I said, let's just buy the theater. So we go to buy, we open up Fandango.
Yeah.
And you only can buy them 10 at a time. So we buy 10.
Really?
We're all buying 10. I think it was like a 60-person theater, right? So we're buying multiple ones, whatever one. Murray forgets to buy one of the seats in the first row. Middle
then
seat.
You just had a stranger.
We walk in, there's just some dude sitting there, and then we look at the map, and that was the only seat we had forgotten. And he was like, and then we're like sitting down, and now the guy, now think about this experience for the guy. The guy's like, fuck, I got finally the last seat. Yes, yeah. I could see it. He walks in, there's no one in there. We roll in previews, there's no one in the theater.
Yeah.
He's sitting in his assigned seat.
Shit.
So we're sitting there. No, we're sitting there. Well, no, we got in during the preview, right?
Yeah.
So the previews are on. Oh, no, I'm sorry. We did tell him. We got in during the preview. Mm-hmm. We're sitting there. We all sit down, whatever. And I see the guy, and I say, we all look up. We see this. We start laughing. We're like, oh, my God, this guy. We forgot this guy. So I'm like, guys, I got to tell this guy. He can sit wherever he wants. So I go up to the guy, and I go, hey, I was like, you know, I just want to let you know there's nobody else coming to this movie. It's just us. And he goes, what are you talking about? It was sold out, but it's in the dark, so we can't see who I am.
Yeah.
We just bought the theater. I said, but we didn't buy the seat because, and you got it. I said, but feel free to sit wherever you want. We feel bad, you know. And the light turns on or whatever, and he sees my face, and he goes, no, for real? I said, yeah, for real. I said, we just wonder why. He's like, all right. You think I get a picture when it's over? I said, sure, we'll take a picture when it's over.
Oh, my God.
So he goes and he sits down, whatever. The whole movie, we're sitting there quiet. It's great or whatever. Something happens where Spider-Man gets hit, and it was an older black gentleman, right?
Yeah.
Spider-Man gets, like, hit or whatever, and he goes, he gets smacked. Spider-Man, like, smacks somebody hard or whatever, and they go down, and he goes, oh, you know, that's right. And that was it. We fucking lost it. That was the only words that were spoken throughout the whole movie. It was so great.
What an amazing experience for that guy. Crazy. Too, by the way.
But talk about going from shit to the fucking, not the better half, to the better half, right?
Right.
Like
yeah.
He was neck breaking it, first row.
You're by yourself.
And by yourself
in
the movie theater. We put him right in the middle with us. Yeah,
and then you're hanging out with the Impractical Jokers.
So cool.
That is such a great, that's funny. A story he could tell for days.
Yeah,
that's
so
great,
cool.
Man.
Yeah.
I love when people come to a comedy show by themselves.
Oh, love that.
Because I try to make them a part of the show, and then they're always coming up for Sausage Party. And I'm just like, it's almost like now it's my MO to make sure you have a story tomorrow.
Yeah, for sure.
That's so great.
That's so great. That guy's living his best life now. Seeing Spider-Man. Well, you know, that's right.
There was a kid that came to a Sullivan & Son show by himself. He had just moved to Connecticut, like 22-year-old Korean kid. And he's like, oh, I love Sullivan & Son. Thanks for doing the show. It's, you know, nice to see an Asian on the, whatever, all that horse shit. Anyways, we end up taking him out that night with us. I don't know if I said this story before.
100 times.
Have I?
100 times.
Okay, yeah.
I was going to wait
he
till you're done.
He ends up on the set on Sullivan's
and then Ken Jeong was there.
Yeah.
It's great. It's a great story every time you tell it. Have more stories. You're 40-something years old.
Do you know how much this studio costs every 15 minutes?
Yeah, you're costing me $2.50 an episode.
So cheap date night. I'm going to try your suggestion.
I'd do it. I would.
By the way, I would rather
with
now
me?
That they do the now that they do the same day release, $20. I'd rather rent a movie and stay at home.
Yeah,
unless it's like Top Gun, Avengers, Star Wars.
You know that's right. Yeah, you got to see that in the theater. Yeah, I hear. I think you have to see every movie in the theater though. I'm a big fan of going to theaters to support. But I get you. But with our schedule, we could go at off times if you really want to see a movie.
Somebody will ruin it.
Somebody will be there
every time. Did I tell you about the Southwest flight? 43 people on the plane. They announce everybody gets their own row. What do you think happens to me?
No.
Yes, I got Justin Graced. I'm sitting in the third row. I'm like, it's fucking great. Two Japanese fuckers sit right next to me. And I'm doing the old
heavy breathe eye check.
The old sigh and looking. And literally the flight attendant looks at them. And goes, ladies and gentlemen, just so you know, we only have 43 people on this plane. Everybody can have their own row. There's no need to sit in a row with somebody you don't know. And he's looking at them. And I'm like, these fuckers don't speak any English.
What kind of Japanese were they? That was my question.
What kind of Japanese?
Were they like Japanese imports or were they Japanese originals? Were they OGs or were they like bootleg? You know what I'm saying? Like, are they full-blown? Is she rocking? She like
full-blown Japanese?
Full-blown FBJs or PJs? Partially Japanese. What are we talking about? Is it an FBJ scenario? Like, what did they, you know, when the food came?
I'm like a Chinatown knockoff of Korea.
There you go.
I don't really count, yeah.
Were they sticking it or were they forking it? What are they doing? When they bring over the meal, are they, oh, let's go. Does she do this?
Yeah.
She take it out of the hair and do this? I'm not sure. Talk to me. What's she wearing? Kimono situation or what?
Bound feet. they were definitely OGs.
So you don't think they understood OJs? Original Japanese.
OJs, yeah.
You don't think that, orange juice? You don't think they knew what was going on? You don't think they understood 43?
Didn't understand it. And then
you didn't translate?
It's one of those things.
I would have literally had Google Translate up. I would have been like, you can sit wherever you want to sit. Bing, blah, blah, blah.
I know you would. We just went out to eat.
This is phenomenal.
We're leaving the restaurant.
Right now.
Leaving the restaurant.
Oh, and we had Japanese, coincidentally.
Da, da, da.
Yeah.
And Joe sees a girl eating by herself, walks over to her table, and says, are you finished with this, ma'am? She goes, yes. He goes, okay. And he walks over and just brings it over to the station and then walks back over and goes, by the way, I don't work here. And just walked out.
She went, okay, great.
And there were two people at the very front that knew who you were, saw you walking, saw you do that. I'm dying laughing. They're dying laughing. You just completely made their day. I mean, it was
super easy.
Unbelievable. Another day with Joe Gatto.
These are the things that happen, buddy. I love our time together.
He's one in a million. Okay, this is coming to us from Emma. Emma says, okay, advice on not comparing yourself to others. I'm about to audition for a big theater next month and have a terrible imposter syndrome. Just started dance lessons and everyone else has danced for decades. Any words of wisdom? Love you guys.
I don't think she's using imposter syndrome correctly.
Yeah, that's
imposter syndrome, isn't that?
No.
Next question. I will not stand for it.
No, but I think that it doesn't matter.
Next question. No, I'm just kidding. the people are going to be better than you, Emma. You're probably not going to get the part, so you're probably, right? She says she's auditioning.
She's auditioning,
and they've been dancing for 10 years, and she's just started last week.
Yeah.
She's not going to get that part. I mean, she needs to start setting expectations.
The odds are slim.
Slim, yeah. It's a push. Good on you for chasing
but
it.
But you're starting
it. You got to be a realist, too. That's going to be a tough win for you. Unless you're really, really talented, and I don't know if you're like Fred Astaire's niece or grandniece or something. You're not going to get it, Emma. You're just not.
But I think it's always a learning process. The more you audition, the more you put yourself in those situations, the better you're going to get at auditioning.
Right.
They're all different skill sets. Like, to dance is a skill set. To audition for the dance
100%
is a different skill set. Yeah. So get better at that. All those things collectively
They're
all steps, yeah.
Well, get out of your own head is the first part, too. You know, and just enjoy the process is definitely the first part. Right, you have
don't
to enjoy what you're
than,
doing.
Yeah.
Yes, don't feel less than. Right,
do not feel less than.
You will, even though you are quite less than.
I'll tell you this:
she couldn't be less. She couldn't be less than. She couldn't be more less than.
In the Pamela Anderson documentary,
here it is.
Are you ready for this?
Hit me.
Shocked to hear this. Pamela Anderson gets to go to the Playboy Mansion for a photo shoot. She shows up there, and she feels insecure. She's walking around going, "Everybody else is beautiful, and I feel like an ugly duckling." What does that tell you?
She's quackers.
You love it. You love it. This is the stuff that stays in. And the minute I drop F-bombs.
Well, I'm not like you. I'm not saying she fucked a duck. Like, that's what you say, right? An underage duck she fucked. Like, that would be your joke. It doesn't even make sense. Mine is funny and fine. Yours is just abrasive. You're an imposter.
Okay.
Oh, God, I love you.
Good to be here.
That doesn't impress you how quick I came out with quackers, though. Come on.
Look, nobody does puns quicker than you.
Nobody.
Okay. This is coming to us from Lauren. My dilemma, this is how it starts up. Not like even high.
Not even high. Just my dilemma. She's got
right
she
to
needs
it,
help.
Yeah.
She needs help. Let's help
going
her.
Right to the tomahawk steak. Let's There's no it. Apps here. My dilemma is that I'm afraid of getting sick. That's literally it. I'm scared of vomit. I have trouble eating and doing things I love solely because I'm afraid to vomit.
Okay.
Let me read this one more time. My dilemma is that I'm afraid of getting sick. That's it.
Getting sick meaning to vomit.
I'm scared to vomit.
Yeah,
I'm
not
vomit.
Getting sick like germs-wise. You're just afraid of getting sick, the act of throwing up. That's probably a mental thing.
Who enjoys vomiting
nobody
dogs?
It. But she has they love it, don't they? I get the Scotty in the bed, and I'm like, I fucking throw it off the bed. It gets midair, and I tell you about that. Through midair.
Oh, no. God, you chucked it, and it's just.
I didn't by accident. Spumoni's little, right? And I heard the. And I was like, doggy dilf to the rescue. And I was like, oh, I was like, what's that? And I took the sheet off, and I didn't realize she was on the edge of the sheet. She was like, oh. In the air and threw up, but she landed back on the bed. But she was airborne when she threw up. I felt bad. That seems like a mental issue. If you're genuinely afraid of it, like that's got maybe hypnosis. I would recommend, right? They could solve that shit with hypnosis.
Hypnosis?
Yeah, you believe in that?
Because you're scared of,
like when it, you know, like you don't want to smoke anymore. Follow my finger.
Yeah, I know what. Yeah,
follow my finger. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Why does it keep pointing to the door?
I'm just telling you to get out. I don't know. Thanks for coming. Can we change it to one? I think.
But look, nobody likes vomiting. Nobody wants to vomit. But
you're interpreting this as she just doesn't like it, or she's saying she's afraid to.
Yeah,
like a fear, like oh.
But I,
she like, can't eat.
It doesn't prevent me from drinking like all the time. I love drinking, clearly. But I hate vomiting.
Clearly, tell me something I don't know.
Joe?
That's yellow.
I think. Yeah, I mean, nobody likes it.
Who likes vomiting? The only time I like vomiting is when you know, like, okay, this is going to make me feel better.
That's true. Are you one of those that tries, like, oh, here it goes. Are you, like, one of those long ones? Yeah. My son is a champ.
Yeah.
He's like, Daddy, I think I'm going to throw up. And he goes, that's it, and he's done.
That's it.
Done. Yeah. My daughter, I need some water. Give me a washcloth. Like that whole thing. My son's like, he doesn't even bend down. He's like, and he nails it from like an outside shot. He's like, nailed it. Kareem Abdul's it.
We have a cat that vomits probably once a month.
Right.
And you just see it, like you said, it just kind of arches and it's like, and now somebody pulls the pin on the grenade and rolls in the house. You're like, I got 3 seconds to do something. And it's on the carpet. Bink.
Yeah.
Not anymore. On the hardwood, please.
Do you know what the weird thing is that they haven't made an alarm that is that sound? Because it wakes you up from the deadest sleep.
Like that ringtone?
That ringtone. Like, you know the alarm settings that you have? You could have bling chimes or 1 hour sleep, gambling for 4 days in Vegas, like on a bender. I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm up. When
it is the worst sound in the world.
If I'm in a coma. If I ever go in a coma, do me a favor.
Yeah.
Pull the plug. Next question. No, I think that will wake me from a coma. I'm not even shitting you.
Yeah. It's such a triggering sound.
It's such a triggering, powerful sound.
Because you're going, as soon as you hear it,
I just solve comas? I might have just solved comas.
Hi, I'm Dr. Gatto. You haven't talked to him in 8 years?
Have they?
Bring Charlie in.
Have they tried that?
Charlie, eat some chocolate in front of it. No.
Oh. I think that would seriously. My mind is blown. Why aren't you more amazed?
Would it work?
Yeah, I think so.
In theory, I don't know. As soon as you hear a dog,
if you know anybody with a coma, please write in, and I would love to try it.
Okay,
that's the only way to start
that's the
it.
Challenge.
It's like a what's that called? What do you call it? Group?
Focus group?
Not a focus group, but the think group.
The what? A think tank?
A think tank.
Okay.
We need a think tank, right? We started our think tank. Now we need our experimental group there.
We already think
we're not in comas.
You did it.
We're not in comas.
Yeah.
So we need people to volunteer that are in comas, but they can't. So if you know somebody in a coma, walk over to them, lift their arm up.
Well, when I told that story about the kid in Connecticut, I saw you slowly receding into a coma.
Because I was like, heard this.
Why don't you stop me?
Because it was fun to watch it implode. I knew you'd realize.
This is coming to us from Jay.
Jay!
Finally, a dude. Thank you. Jesus. Two cool mommies. This one is for you both. With today's sensitive Sallys, cancel culture, political correctness, offended Olivers, or whatever they call themselves today, do you find yourselves rewriting and proofreading around this to avoid certain backlash or criticisms? Unfortunately, I feel the day of raw and uncut has left us, and this hinders the medicine we all call laughter. Love you both and appreciate the smiles you deliver, Jay. It's a very well-worded thing, offended Olivers.
I love the way
sensitive Sallys.
I love the way that you read it.
Yeah,
honestly, because that is your thoughts on a message from a stranger. It's so funny because you were like, "I'm connecting with this one." I mean, I was never that type of comedian that was edgy or on the edge or anything like that. Sure, I've done some things here and there, but
yeah,
it wasn't really. It's not really my brand, so it'd be more of a step to do it for me than it's a step to stay away from it, if that makes sense.
Right.
It'd be more of a like, I'm making the, I do always try to keep aware of how what I say would make people feel or whatnot. But for the most part, I'm not the type of comedian I think that has to deal with that as much as other types of comedians.
Like me.
Like you, for sure.
I just think you go all in.
Yeah.
I think you go all in.
But that was your brand before that, though, right?
Before all this,
like it wasn't like you were like, oh, fuck that, I can't say that anymore,
I'm going to say
it now. Like you were always this type. If you look at your first comedy special and you look at the content of that.
Sure, yeah.
Right? You wouldn't be able to make that special today.
No.
Right, nobody would green like that, right?
No.
So I think that speaks to you're the opposite end of that coin.
Yeah. Yeah. We've had discussions about this on the road.
Yeah.
Talking about, your audience in particular and when I come along.
Yes,
for example. But I think
you also feel that though, right? You feel like when you get up there, because you're a professional and you're a comedian, you know my job here is to make people laugh.
Sure, yeah.
I'm going to do this to make people have a good time. I'm not up there to ruin people's nights, or not even ruin,
of course,
but just to,
yeah,
you're looking to enhance the experience for everybody.
Sure.
So when you're up there telling your jokes that you would normally tell in Pittsburgh at the midnight show, mm-hmm, you know, versus when you're doing the theater of the type of people that come to see me,
sure,
or a different,
yeah,
type, family friendly kind of thing, like, you know, as a professional and a gifted comedian, to be like, this is what I should be saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not,
yeah,
like you're doing it to be like, oh, I can't say that anymore. You just, it's not right to say it there.
No, by the way, I agree with you. I think that there, I remember seeing, I don't know, a group of comics talk about this, that it's like, you can make the joke. You know, you can make a joke about anything, but there are times where you question, but is it necessary? Like, right, there's some comics that feel the need to, like, beat their chest and go, I'm doing it, and I should be rewarded for the simple fact that I'm saying this, right?
I'm brave.
Like, I remember when Louis C.K. had the N-word bit, that he was, like, one of the first comics to have a mainstream, like, N-word bit. It was very funny, and he did, obviously, in a very creative way. And then there were other comics that would just go up and saying it just to say it to get the reaction. The reaction was... that they were getting was, yeah, I said it, but they didn't have anything to back it up, right?
Right, right, right.
But, like, Louis actually had something really creative and well thought out behind it, and it made total sense. When you hear it, it's like, ah, right? So that's the case of, like, yeah, you can do it,
yeah,
but should you? It's like, in that case, you should, because that was a really smart, fun way to do it. And then there's other people that do it that way. My thought is always, I'm always a well-intended person. Like, the intention is to be positive, to have fun out there, to kind of poke fun at, you know, taboos or whatever, but never, never, ever to vilify or make somebody feel uncomfortable,
yeah,
about their identity.
But you always make fun of both sides. You do that a lot, which
everything
is good. You pride yourself on that, right? You make fun of everybody. Nobody's
no one
safe
more than me.
Right.
You know, that's why even in the special, the last one, it was like, you know, yes, I'm poking fun, but here's the things that literally were said to me that hurt me the most. But then, being older now, and as a comic, you have this perspective of, like, well, what is the purpose of that insult? Like, what did it do, and how did it make me a better person? So that was, like, the backbone of that whole special. There was a theme to it and a purpose.
Yeah.
And again, those jokes that pushed the boundaries, they were all purposeful in being there, because it was the proof of the thesis. It's like, here's my thesis, and now I'm going to prove it,
yep,
and it's through my own personal experiences. So I agree with you that, yeah, there are times where
I do find myself, though, sometimes when I say something or I think about saying something, I'll stop myself on stage. Like, especially when I improvise a lot in my shows,
yeah,
in the beginning when I'm messing around, or sometimes when I say something like, you know.
Even the monitor wants
even the monitor
stop.
Wants us to wrap it up. Okay. All right, well, we'll take the hint. Thanks, monitor. Oh, you know it's a bad podcast when you're getting error messages on the monitor. I thought this was a good one.
I thought it was a great one. I had fun.
I disagree with you, monitor. Fuck you, monitor.
Fuck you, monitor. Piece of shit.
Well, thanks, everybody, for listening to Two Cool Moms. We love you. Please subscribe. Spread the word.
Spread the word.
And come out to see us live. You can see,
yeah, steveburnlive.com
and joegattoofficial.com. Much love, everybody.
These two cool mommies love you, so show us some love.
Please rate us, review us, follow us on all social media, and subscribe to our YouTube.